Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
This is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I'm pleased to bring to you Tehillim Mem Vav, Psalm 46. There are certain motifs, or better yet, markers, found in messianic prophecies, the prophecies of Acharit Hayamim. Acharit Hayamim is what scholars call eschaton, or eschatology, or the end of days prophecies. But this is something of a misnomer, since Acharit does not mean the end. But in fact, in biblical Hebrew, it means just days that come after the ones that we're currently in. In the Bible, and in fact in post-biblical Jewish history as well, these messianic events sometimes peek out into human history, but can then disappear without completing themselves, without flowering into a full messianic day. That is to say, you can have an initial flowering of the ultimate salvation, a reshit tzmichat gulotenu, but ultimately that flower can wither or hibernate until the next flowering comes along. Yeshayahu, the prophet Isaiah, certainly felt that Assyria's march on Israel in 701 BC was the beginning of the messianic age, and the rabbis of the Talmud in fact agree that the king of the time, Chizkiyahu, or Hezekiah, could have been the messianic king if only he had handled things correctly. But he didn't. Same with King Yoshiahu, Josiah, probably the same with King Shlomo, King Solomon, and certainly the same with Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel, David's descendant, who helped build the second temple, and who the prophet Zechariah in fact calls Tzemach, the flowering, but then disappears into history without a trace. So the earth-shaking events that accompanied each of those times, the natural disasters, the global war, each had the potential to be the final transformative messianic event. However, the one that will turn out to be the final event, well, we have yet to experience it. The one central theme of all messianic prophecies is that God reveals himself and intervenes in human history. As it says in Zechariah 14, V'yatsa Adonai v'nilcham bagoyim ahem, and the Lord will go forth and war with those peoples. This leads to the other markers which I mentioned, which are found in messianic prophecies as well. One are the earthquakes and other transformative, quote-unquote, natural disasters. Two, because of the earthquakes that show up, a river begins to flow out of Jerusalem in multiple directions, and it flows even in the summer, and the significance of that I'll get to shortly. Number three, there's usually a clarifying light or a magnification of the sun and the moon. Number four, the frequent use of the term Hashem Tzvaot, the Lord of Hosts, as befits number five, which is the all-out or global war between the nations and Israel. Number six, God's destructions of those enemies. Seven, a personification of nature as a destructive entity to be controlled or destroyed by God. And eight, the salvation of a remainder of the nation of Israel in Holy Jerusalem. Pretty much all of these markers can be found in our short psalm, our short prayer, number 46. The only end of days or messianic markers that are not found in our psalm there are really two things that are missing. One is the phrase, V'haya bayom ha'u, and it will be on that day. And another marker is the acceptance of the whole world that God is the king of the whole world. These two ideas, however, are found in the next psalm, which makes the next psalm, 47, a perfect complement to this one, as we will see tomorrow. But even though these two markers are missing here in Psalm 46, it is clear that this psalm is a prayer to be used in the war preceding the Messianic Age. This is an Acharit Hayamim prayer, perhaps to give people the confidence that they'll make it through those terrible, frightening times okay. The commentator Rabbi David Kimchi, the Radak, highlights this right away. And even Eben Ezra, who prefers to put this psalm in general or historical terms, slips out in verse 10 and says, Ulai Beruach HaKodesh al Devar Gog, perhaps, under divine inspiration, this refers to the events of Gog. The war of Gog and Magog, is described in Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39 as the final eschatological battle, which will usher in the Messianic Age. Another detailed description of those times, this final battle, can be found in the final chapter of the book of Zechariah, chapter 14, and I will demonstrate the many similarities between Zechariah 14 and our own Psalm 46 as we proceed. Lamnatzeach levnei Korach al alamot shir, for the maestro by the Korachites on alamot, a poem. Alamot literally means young girls, and therefore is most likely some kind of high-pitched instruments or perhaps an instruction to sing the song in soprano. Elohim lanu machaseva oz ezra bitzarot nimtza ma'od. God is our refuge, our strength, or perhaps our stronghold, if we assume that the word oz is short for ma'oz. In troubled times, his great help is found. Al kein lo nira behamir aretz uvmotz harim blev yamim. Therefore, we will not fear as land is inverted and as mountains topple into the sea. And there's the earthquake marker that I mentioned. For more examples of end-of-day earthquakes, see Zechariah 14, Yechezkel, Ezekiel 38, Yoel 4, Isaiah 24. And in fact, most prophecies dealing with the eschaton also have this idea of a massive earthquake. Yehemu yechmiru meimav yir ashu harim begaavato sela. Its waters, i.e. the waters of the ocean from the previous verse where the mountains fell into, the waters will roil and pile up. I think the image here is very tsunami-like. The mountains will quake with its pride. And I think the pride is that of the oceans, which means, well, in the literal sense, what it means is that the oceans will swell up and therefore inundate the land or cause more earthquakes or other disasters. There's a personification, a turning the oceans into some kind of breathing and living entity, as if the seas in their swelled pride are attempting to bring down the earth. The Tanakh actually describes very often even a greater personification, the idea of a great sea monster, which constantly struggles against God and whose movements causes earthquakes. This is often termed as the Leviathan, for example, in Isaiah in Yeshayahu chapter 27. On the other hand, the pride in this verse may, the word bega'avato may mean God's pride, but in a positive sense of majesty. That is, he is described as controlling these immense and destructive forces. In any event, the verse ends with Sela, one of the three Selas in this psalm, so it may mark off the first section of the psalm. If so, that it is a section marker, then this section described the world torn asunder. The second and third Selas are actually at the end of a repeated refrain in verses 8 and 12, which clearly delineate sections of this psalm. If the Sela here does mark off a new section, then the next section from verse 5 through verse 8 is about how these worldwide upheavals affect the land and people in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem, specifically. Nahar Plagav Yisamachu Ir Elohim Kedosh Mishkanei Elyon. The river's streams will gladden the city of God, will gladden the holy ones of the dwelling place of the one who is on high. I'm taking Kadosh here not as a description of the dwelling place itself, that is Jerusalem being Kadosh, but of the holy people who dwell in Jerusalem. And this is very similar to a messianic idea that we have in Isaiah chapter 4, V'haya ha-nishar b'tzion v'ha-notar b'yushalayim Kadosh ye'amer lo, i.e. the survivors in Jerusalem will be all sanctified. And it is also similar to the idea in Zechariah 14, which I promised we would draw many, many comparisons to. Bayom ahu v'haya kol sir b'yushalayim uvihuda kodesh ladunai tzva'ot, and Bayom ahu yeh al metzilot asus kodesh ladunai. So there the prophecy states that all of Jerusalem's contents, its animals, its pots, its pans, everything will be dedicated exclusively to God as well. That is, the entire contents of Jerusalem, whatever's left over, will be really consecrated for one purpose only, which is serving God. The most important messianic marker of this verse is not so much the word Kodesh, but it is the ever-flowing live waters, the stream from the Temple Mount which flows in multiple directions. And again, this can also be found in Zechariah 14. V'haya b'yom ahu yetzeu mayim chayim yushlayim chetziyam el hayam hakadmoni v'chetziyam el hayam haacharon b'kayetz u'bachoref yihyeh. The water will flow down, this living bubbling water will flow down from Yerushalayim in both directions, and it will flow both in summer and in winter. In Yechezkel 47, also referring to Messianic days, he writes, Vayishiveni el petach habayit vihine mayim yotzim. Here comes the water coming out. The pasuk goes on to say, Kadima, towards the east, Vamayim yordim mitachem ketav habayit hayimanit, and it goes out the other side. The idea of overflowing water is critical, since Israel, unlike, and very messianic, because Israel, unlike Egypt, relies on rain and runoff for its water. And in fact, in the book of Devarim, in Deuteronomy, it actually says, this land is not like the land of Egypt, you have to pray to God in order to get it to rain. But in the times of the Mashiach, there will be an ever-flowing water, much like the Nile River, but all coming from flowing continuously and always from the holy mountain in Jerusalem, and that will be a permanent sign of God's intervention for his people. Getting back to our psalm, Elohim bikir bah bal timot yazirah Elohim lifnot boker. God is in her, or in her midst, in Jerusalem's midst, keeping her from toppling. God will help her towards daybreak. This is similar to the idea of a light signaling the redemption, which can be found once again in Zechariah chapter 14. V'haya yom echad hu yivadal Adonai, it will be known as the day of God, lo yom v'lo laila, v'haya le'et erev, and even though it's in the evening, yihye or, there will be light. As well as in Isaiah 30, is also this idea of the sun and the moon glowing sevenfold, the power of what they have now. There in Isaiah 30, we have your earthquakes, Hereg, Rav, Binfol, Migdalim. We have streams and rivers, Vaya, Al Kol Har Gavov, Al Kol Giva, Nisa'a, Plagim, Yivle, Mayim, just like we have in our own psalm. We have light, Vaya, Or Halavanak, Or Chamav, Or Chama, Yeshivatayim, Koor Shivatayim. And we have many of the other markers and motifs of the pre-Messianic days, or the Acharit Hayamim as well. Now, as opposed to Jerusalem and its people who will not topple, and Jerusalem that will not topple, we have the rest of the world. Hamu goyim matu mamlachot natan mekolot hamug aretz. Nations will be shaken, empires will topple, as God calls out the earth, or perhaps the peoples of the earth, as God calls out, they will melt away. This is similar to the great song of the sea that Moses and Miriam sang when they were coming out of Egypt and going to the promised land. Az nifalu alofei adom, elei moav yochazemu ra'ad, namogu, there's that verb like we have tamug here, namogu kol yoshei Kanaan, all the dwellers in Kanaan will melt away. And now to the refrain, which ends this section of Psalm 46, and which will reappear at the end of the psalm. Adonai tzivaot imanu miskavlanu Elohei Yaakov Selah. The Lord of hosts is with us, a high place for us. Picture something like the Matsada fortress. The God of Jacob Selah. Note the reference to God as the Lord of hosts, a reference which is used at least 30 times in the final messianic section of the book of Zechariah, starting from chapters 8 and going through the final chapter 14. The next section calls for the audience to recognize that these acts, the war, the quote-unquote natural disasters, that they all come from God's intervention in the natural order, his insertion into human history. And with their recognition, the prayer demands that he have their submission as well, and that they cease their war. And if they don't cease, then God will do it for them. L'chu chazu mif'alot Adonai asher sam shamot ba'aretz. Go and see the works of the Lord in that he has laid desolation in the land. Interestingly, this command to go and see the works of the Lord is found in Psalm 66 as well. So when you get there, keep this psalm in mind. The implication of this verse is that the desolation of war is widespread, but as we will see, it is not the remnant of Jerusalem who is being called upon to take notice, but the enemies. Mashbit milchamot akseh haaretz keshe yishaber v'kitzetz chanit agalot yisrof ba'esh. He causes war to cease until the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and splinters the spear. He burns the wagons. Presumably these wagons are used in warfare for logistics. He burns them in fire. Harpu ude'u ki anochi Elohim arum bagoyim arum ba'aretz. Let go. Literally, loosen your grip. But either way, the sense is call off the war, because I am God. I will be ascendant among the nations. I will be ascendant in the land. And now we return to the final refrain, addressing again the survivors of the war in Jerusalem. Obviously, war is still very much afoot. The nations, be they Gog and Magog, or perhaps some others, have not yet recognized that God is the cause, and they persist in their war. Therefore, the people hear and they pray, Adonai Tzivaot Imanu Miskavlanu Elohei Yaakov Sela. The Lord of hosts is with us. He is a high place for us, the God of Jacob Sela.